Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Lumpen Kulturati podcast with me, Carl Javier. Today, I am with Dean Alfar. Hey, Dean.
Hey.
And you may have heard one of our earlier podcasts where Dean talked about his story Six from Downtown. Right now, we're going into fanboy mode because Dean is going to talk about Lock and Key.
I love it.
I know you do. The reason why I started reading Lock and Key was because Dean told me that I had to. Like, if I was reading comics, then it was the book that I had to be reading. Why, Dean?
Because I love it!
Dean has warned me that he will become unintelligent in reference to this comic book.
We all are looking for a good read. Uh-huh. We comic book lovers. And I will betray my age and confess that I went through the Alan Moore period, that wonderful time during DC's Vertigo,
right.
Where you had Alan Moore on Swamp Thing, mm-hmm. and you had Neil Gaiman on Sandman, yeah. you had Grant Morrison on Doom Patrol, and these guys were spinning crazy stories and crazy narratives. And sadly, things like that started to come fewer and further farther in between each other, and it was always a quest to find something delectable to read.
Yeah.
So, to fast forward, many years later, I came across Lock and Key, which is written by Joe Hill and mm-hmm. illustrated by Gabriel Rodriguez. Joe Hill, of course, is the son of famous horror writer Stephen King, and he wrote this story, which is over the course of multiple books of six issue blocks each.
Yeah.
And it tells the story of a family who are fighting against, it's gonna sound so trite, but they're yeah. fighting against a great evil, and they have these
a malevolent spirit.
Incredible keys that have the power to bend reality and yeah, change things.
Let's get past the corniness. There's this family, and they're the Locke family,
yes.
and they live in a place called Key House.
Yes.
That is in Lovecraft, Massachusetts.
It's beautiful!
Oh no, when you gave me that elevator pitch, it sounded like something I would never, ever read.
I know, but once you get started, you are drawn in by the incredible character work, mm-hmm. because these are living, breathing people. At the core of the story is a set of siblings, three siblings, mm-hmm. An older brother, a middle sister, and a younger brother, who is only around 9 or 10 years old.
Six. Yeah, maybe younger.
Or younger.
6 or 7.
And all the crazy stuff that happens to them, it all begins with a tragedy, and then it's a series of unfolding tragedies as they begin to discover the secrets of the keys.
Yeah, it starts off, and just not a spoiler because it's issue one of this very, very long run, but in the first issue, their father is murdered, so the patriarch of the Locke family is killed by what just seems like a psychopathic guy.
Yes.
But it's revealed later on that it's much more than this. And so, with the death of their father, they move back to the ancestral home, said Key House.
Yes.
And they begin to discover these keys that grant them various really interesting powers. Like, what's your favorite key?
Wow. My favorite keys would have to be, it would be a toss-up between uh-huh. the Anywhere Key.
Okay.
The Anywhere Key, all it requires is a door, and then you need to know where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And you open the door with the key, and the door opens into the place where you want.
Saves you a lot on plane fare.
Plane fare and traffic, you know, I'll never be late. And you can get to be anywhere yeah. in the world.
But if you're a bad dude,
then you can use right. it and abuse it.
Uh-huh.
And of course, the other interesting key among so many is the head key.
Yes, yes.
Do you remember the head key?
Definitely. How yes. many times have I posted a picture of the head key, right?
The head key has a beautiful and disturbing graphic if you take a look at the comic book. the head key is placed at the back of the head, at the neck, at the nape, and twisted, and then the top part of your skull opens and it reveals all your thoughts. Mm-hmm. So you can do things like remove certain thoughts or insert knowledge. You can put a manual in.
Yeah, in the introduction of the head key, they have Bo, the youngest, get a cookbook and put the entire cookbook in his head.
Yes, and then suddenly he's a master of certain recipes
he
found
can recite.
There.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing there is it doesn't necessarily give you an understanding.
Yes.
It's just facts. So yeah. When the same trick is done with ethics textbook, so you, the character knew the price point of the book and the ISBN number, and he can quote, but it doesn't necessarily give you an understanding. So one of the beautiful things there is that it teaches that there are no shortcuts in life. So that's one of the things I really admire about the writing here. If you take a look at the keys and what they represent, as well as the various situations that they are deployed and the people who use or misuse them, you can see that there's unseen depths and things that you can plumb beyond just the action of the narrative.
Yeah, because the great thing about fantasy is that you can use metaphors to bring out like human nature and the way that people respond, which is, I think, why I think the head key is also one of my favorites, because, for example, you have the middle sister, Kinsey, and she takes the head key and she uses it to remove her fear. And
her tears, her capacity to cry.
Yeah.
And imagine yourself being able to do that. You can be fearless. Yeah. So it's like a fantasy come true if you imagine it, but there's also the consequences that we are shown. So what is a person without fear? How do you deal with
what happens?
And what happens to you?
And you're incapable of feeling to a level where you regret or
tears, which is our mechanism for coping with things like regret and sadness and sorrow. We need that release. So a person, we are taught, a person should not cry. You are strong.
Mm-hmm.
But here we are shown the consequences of not being able to. It changes you.
And that's the deftness, I think, of the writing in this thing, is the way that it uses those keys to show us emotion.
Yes. Certain human truths, as well as certain inhuman truths.
Yeah, because it has this great range where when it's pushing the plot forward, you can't breathe.
Oh yes.
Right? You can't. This is suspense at a high level. And the thing about this is it's also incredibly violent.
Oh yes.
It doesn't hold back. I mean, Jesus, they're you know, many deaths and many traumatizing deaths.
Yes.
And it does that whole wonderful Whedon thing where it makes you love a character very, very briefly.
Oh, yes.
And then kills them just to...
Yes. George R. R. Martin is likewise guilty of this. And the nice thing is, I experienced it in its periodical form.
Yes.
So it would be issue by issue.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I think, Carl, you experienced it as straight paper.
I came in the middle.
Okay. Right. So I had to wait.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
But there was a delight in that, which is part of why I love comics.
I can't imagine waiting.
It was crazy because in the lacuna between issues, the current issue and the upcoming one, you just have to find a friend. And you can geek out and talk about it, and you can theorize.
Like we're doing it right now.
Like we're doing it right now. It is not the same as reading a trade paperback because you're getting a bigger chunk. But it is the space in between the trades.
Yes.
The stories that you'll be able to do the same thing.
The space between when you can afford to buy the next one.
Things are expensive.
No, there's the really nice hardcover edition now.
I love that. There's even a collectible set of the keys. I'm geeking out now. There's a board game or
is there? Oh,
yes,
I want to.
Yes, I want it. And you 3 to 6 players in Key House looking for keys.
Oh. Oh man.
Oh.
And you get to use the keys.
You get to use
acquired.
The keys. I don't know. I'm making it up in my head. So. Fantastic. Fantastic.
I think one of the strongest stories there was the one that had the race key.
Yes.
Is that correct? Where,
yes.
Yeah, it's a platform not only for amazing storytelling, but also goes into the social commentary, right? It's, Yes. It's got the race key where it changes you. If you're white, it makes you black. And so through that one story, they explore the racial differences that occur.
Yes, the skin key, I think it's called. But it does change your race. And those stories are important for leaders like us here in the Philippines, wherein matters of race are not so, I will apologize for my phrasing, black and white.
True.
Okay? But we have a sort of racism here ourselves.
Yeah, we have our own. It's class-based,
it's
our racism
class-based.
And our provincial.
And our skin color.
Yeah.
And how we always think getting whiter is always better.
Yeah.
And how it's aspirational. And how our advertising teaches us precisely.
Yeah, everything's whitening.
Yeah, so that's why we look towards the West. I like my skin color.
I'm fine, you know.
Yeah. But it's important because, like, in that particular issue that you mentioned, it showed that there was a difference between how people react or even speak to. Taxi cabs wouldn't stop for Kinsey and her brother both until they changed skin color again. So, right. So it's the keys were used as a vehicle to talk about things of various social issues. There's also the gender changing.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot that we would fantasize about. And one of the things that thrilled me is the dazzling variety of keys and the slow reveal. Because for a long time, you only were shown a few keys.
Yeah.
And then there was a storyline called Keys to the Kingdom.
Right.
Wherein, like in one particular issue, over the course of the issue's pages, multiple keys were shown.
And this Keys to the Kingdom, is this the one where they expand the mythology?
Yes.
And so you see the history of it, and they can see into the past and stuff.
Yes, with the time shift key, they can go back to the past. We were shown the giant key, we can change size. Amazing.
Oh, I love the giant key. If only for that. There's this one amazing issue where, a lot of lock and key is very tight.
Yes.
And it's very dialogue based.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's small panels.
Small
things happening. And the great thing about horror in any form that's visual is the feeling that there's just something at the fringes or just
at the periphery that you cannot see.
Yeah. And it plays on that. But then it has this amazing issue where everything is splash pages.
Suddenly,
your
paradigm is altered because it's a splash page.
Yeah.
And it's huge. And it's single image.
Yeah.
And you're used to looking at small panels and then suddenly, boom.
Yeah. And it's earned on a story level. You get there because the story is taking you to that point. And I think it's this careful planning, this careful plotting. You're very right to point out the effectiveness of the release in single issue, right? Because it stops you, and so you can go back and you can think. And what I love when I read singles is, because you're reading the new single, you're gonna back read.
Yes.
And go back and
to appreciate your latest purchase.
Yeah.
You will have to read that. And as you both know, there's a value in rereading.
Yes.
There are certain things that you will see, or things that are revealed to you if you look back, and then you will see. And the nice thing is, we are given in Lock and Key a narrative through line, but we are also shown what happens in the past. And not just in the character's past, but their father's past and the remote past. We even treated to the origin of the keys.
Yes. And did you see the Guide to Unknown Keys?
I love it. I want all of those things.
There's these extra stories, like there's Grindhouse. Was it?
Grindhouse, yes.
Where you have it set in like the 1920s mobster era.
Yes.
And then the house comes under attack by these mobsters. And keys start revealing themselves to the occupants so that they can fight off.
So they can fight them
off. It's amazing. And then you have this very quiet story, The Guide to Unknown Keys, where there's this child who's, you know, they know that he's going to die.
Very soon.
Very soon. And the father fashions a key that will make things a little better. And it's just the tonal range of it is displayed.
It's amazing. Because those single issues, those standalone, are among the best issues there.
Mm-hmm.
The story you're referring to, some people call it Open the Moon.
Right.
And it becomes this stunning, surreal, literal opening the moon and revealing a balcony where people can just relax and watch the world. And oh, it was just beautiful.
And
it's just beautiful.
It's so incredibly painful.
Yes.
And that's one of those things, I think.
And there's restraint.
Yeah.
It's not played for melodrama.
No.
There's restraint. And you as the reader, you're the one who brings these things in.
Yeah.
Because the danger would be drama for drama's sake.
Yeah.
And while you can have all this gore, you will become inured to it.
And the thing, what I'm thinking is, I'm always so frustrated with stories that just make somebody die. You know,
yeah.
Okay, this person has cancer, and so you must sympathize.
Yeah.
You must care for this because of that. But here, there's that building around of that character in a few pages to make you care.
And that's the amazing thing. This was just in a done-in-one single half issue or so.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, and then the other half is
the listing of the pictures of the keys. So we are made to care because there is something about the character, the mm-hmm. character work.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that it isn't just because. And you feel the father's love, the father's care. So it's amazing.
Yeah, and it's, you can not read The Guide to the Unknown Keys. You don't have to, and you still get the entire story. But it shows you that there's so much to this world. This world is such a large, mythological, imagined world that everything kind of comes together.
Yes. So I was devastated when I learned that they had passed on the TV series. They have a pilot that I've been trying to pirate. But it's not available because I just want to see it. I'm such a fan.
I know that if you bought, like, I think it was Alpha number one, or was it
one, two?
And they have the pictures of the shoot, right?
Oh, yes, yes.
And why is this not happening? Because the...
Or maybe just not yet.
Maybe they
need the right set of people. But see, I have clearly veered into fan-based speculation. It's so sad.
I would like this to happen. If only because this story is so engaging, and if I could experience it in a different way.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, experiencing it in comics is one thing, but with this trend, I think, you know, with The Walking Dead and how it's very different from the comic.
Yes.
But it's brought readers to it.
Yes.
And I think the success of The Walking Dead has brought more creators to the forefront and more readers to comics in general.
Yes.
I think that this Lock and Key story, this is also just on that level of Walking Dead where people will connect.
And similar to Walking Dead, we're in the story of Walking Dead. It's not so much as why the zombies are here and how they were created, but about the people and how they're surviving. So it's that kind of horror. So here it's also about the people and how they're surviving. But more importantly, it's about the family.
Yeah.
The family, so...
And this, I mean, at the end of it, you realize this is really a coming-of-age story.
It is.
And it's a teen story. And I know that people are just stuck on YA as a thing right now. I have my reservations because sometimes people say it's YA and therefore it doesn't have to be of good quality.
Oh, wow.
You know, that's something we can...
I have very strong opinions on that,
right?
Having published the YA anthology recently, right?
It can be quality stuff. And it doesn't have to be cute.
No.
And it doesn't have to be limited to these things. But that's what we're looking at here, because Lock and Key is incredibly violent.
It is.
It's incredibly graphic.
And these kids go through hell. They go
literally
through ringers and ringers. They lose people that they care about. And the devastating thing, spoiler ahead, was one of them.
Spoiler, sure.
One of the three of them, towards the end, dies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And
for people to read,
and Carl and I had to wait for the very, very last issue, which I thought you told me was going to be delayed, and I just wanted to...
It was delayed a couple of months.
Because I really thought that was it.
Yeah.
For that character.
Yeah.
Right? And then...
Yeah.
It worked.
It was so beautiful.
This here.
My treatment of Lock and Key Alpha, right? Because it was supposed to be a single issue, right? The plan is it was one issue, but they realized the story was so big.
They needed...
Yeah. So you get Alpha number one is this, like... action, everything
to bring everything
so
to the end.
Traumatizing, like
horrible.
So much that happens that where you feel like everything has been held back,
and then just, boom!
It was so intense, and I couldn't breathe at the end of it. You know,
actually, because it had the plot, the characters, the action, the keys, and the resolutions.
Yeah. And you thought, okay, well, that might be an end of it, and that would just be the worst, unfair, the most unfair ending to things.
Yes.
Because of how brutal and how immediate it was. The great thing about Alpha 2 is that it still lets those major repercussions have meaning.
Yes.
You know,
they have meaning and they have context, and we were given closure.
Yes.
In certain key points, certain very important elements.
It's a great
ending. That last sequence. Mm-hmm. Oh, please, please, listener, go and buy this. It was worth.
Yeah. No, because Dean and I, before starting the recording, we were talking about TV show endings and how sometimes they just don't pay off, or you feel like there are these, you know, loose ends that weren't explained to
you. Your trust is betrayed.
Yes. And this was just everything you want.
Everything you
want. Right. And so
satisfying on so many levels.
Just emotionally, I swear, this book is emotionally draining, you know?
It is.
My girlfriend, Bo, she was reading it on a bus. And she said, this is in the States, because you don't want to be reading on your iPad in the bus here, because it might just go flying.
Yeah, goodbye.
Right, but so she was reading it on the bus, and she got to that critical point where a character dies, and she gasped. And the people in the bus, are you okay? Are you okay? What's wrong? And then she was tearing up, and she said, no, I'm fine. It's just, it's that kind of book where you forget where you are, and you forget yourself, because it takes you into this true, different world.
And I forgot that I'm reading a comic book. It was like I was reading one finely written prose novel. Because you and I, we will gasp with novels and, or tear up. But here, it came to a point where I was no longer conscious. Because at a certain point, we are conscious that we are reading comics. Because we need to understand the paneling, especially if it's a non-traditional kind of thing. We look for...
Which they do here really well, right? Because you got some really experimental stuff.
Just the paneling, for example, with the Bill Willingham tribute issue. Yeah. Wherein they'll have three panels in the middle, just overlaid over the back panel, wherein that's the last scene or the master thought behind it, whether it's snowing, bad things happening, and then these panels, amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I view Lock and Key as this work that understands the comics form. Right, because it makes the most. It makes the most of it. Because if we are honest with ourselves, while we comics readers love comics and we know what great stuff happens there, like if you go outside of the comics community, they are for children. They're not serious. They're not art. I mean, it's a testament to they're not being art that they're not included in our list of arts here.
Exactly.
So. It takes this medium, and it takes everything you can do artfully within that medium, right? It understands the paneling and all that. And for me, it also understands the serialized nature.
Yes.
And how that
and
works.
It deploys it to its advantage.
Everything.
It creates suspense, the multiple panel layout, the expressions. Yeah. It's amazing. But
all these levels,
what it does is it works because it's a great story.
It transcends. It's just, it didn't matter.
Yes.
Like, it's great. And that's the thing. Like, if it's a film, right? It matters that it's a film.
Yes.
It doesn't matter that it was a film as long as it was a great story.
Yes.
And so all of the story techniques.
On a story level,
on
multiple fronts, it succeeds. I have no issues with the characterization. In fact, my favorite character is not one of the primary characters. My favorite character is Scott Cavanaugh.
Oh, I love it.
He's the Brit exchange student or what?
Yeah,
he's
a punk.
Yeah, yeah. Who's your favorite character?
my favorite to like follow around was the Whedon kid.
Oh yes.
Rufus.
Yes,
Rufus Whedon. Was such an interesting,
very important character. And one should go into his backstory. Oh my gosh.
Although, you know, I also do love, like, Tyler. I understand how it is to be the older brother and you're expected to do everything. Obviously, I did not have that experience.
No, but it was so truthful because there was a point in time he was it was a sibling thing.
Yeah.
And then there was a point in time, I'll do this.
Yeah.
By myself.
You know, he has to take care of his mother because she can't keep it together. That's just, it's really
amazing. Strong characterization, the three siblings, the supporting cast, the mother, the friends around them, and of course, our big bad.
The big bad is like, if you all like Loki,
amazing.
This is like Loki times 10.
Yes.
You know?
Especially since Loki right now grew up and he's now an agent of Asgard.
I know, man. But
what are you doing, Gar?
Oh no, we're gonna go into Marvel talk. But okay. Really, I love Kid Loki.
I wish they had just kept that.
I love Kid Loki, but you know.
And Slash Varela's in Young Avengers. I'm sorry, we're geeking out. Yeah. There you go.
It's money. You know, but if they make this and they get like a Tom Hiddleston to be this, like, to be the big bad.
Yes.
That is a career making role.
Yes.
I think.
Yes. Oh, I would love to see this in some other format.
But this big bad deploys everything. So the big bad has the gender key. The big bad gets, you know, the anywhere key.
At a certain point in time, the big bad has practically all the keys.
Yes.
And the good people have none. It's incredible.
Horrifying.
How can you fight that?
And the big bad is always there. That's the one of the brilliant strokes here, is that the villain isn't in some kind of far off
lair or
they're plotting. The big bad is so immediately close to this family that it's frightening every time that they do anything. And the way that they trust the big bad is just.
And then as a reader is saying, no!
Yes.
No!
It's that. You're saying, can't you guys see?
Don't you know?
Don't you notice? And again, you lose yourself in the story. You lose yourself in the storytelling, which I think makes it a great piece because the technique is there.
Yes.
And the technique is so good that it disappears.
Yes. Visible technique is a sign of poor writing.
Yeah, or oh, look at me, I'm so...
Yes, look at me. Here, it's invisible. You're left with the characters going on with their lives. It just so happens that bad things are happening.
And this isn't a story that pulls punches.
Mm.
You know, it really does terrible things to its characters, but not for shock value,
no.
But to push them into, you know, into more challenging situations.
And I like the fact that they're not always heroic, or they don't always have the right answers.
Yeah.
And it's not always, oh, I'm a genius, I'm Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that they show the weaknesses, the fear, like at the opening arc with Tinsy and Bode on top of the under the roof. They're just there, biting the lip. Oh my god.
This is one of those opportunities, I think, where we can talk about the visual style.
Yes.
Because I think you've mentioned, and a lot of people have told me, they don't like the way that it looks. I initially liked it because it was so clear that the guy was doing cartooning.
Yes, yes.
And it was also very clear that there was this defined style that he was going for. One of the things you notice that's great about it is the faces, right? You see, for example, in Tyler, you see the father.
You see the daughter. You can juxtapose that. And you can see that there's actually a family.
Yeah, the family look,
yes.
Right? But tell us how you felt.
My initial issue was, when I got my first issue, was, because the gravity of the story and the situation. And remember, I was weaned on Vertigo.
Yeah, where so it was very realistic style.
You would have John Total Bandwidth with Alan Moore, and you would have painters doing things for Neil Gaiman.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost as if my education demanded that with a serious kind of story, mm-hmm. serious kind of art. So the initial juxtaposition of the cartoonish look,
right.
Okay, it was off-putting, but the story carried me through. And I did not just get used to the art style of Gabriel Rodriguez. Okay? I grew to love it, and mm-hmm. I looked for it, such that even when, in some of the issues, if you buy them as single periodicals, mm-hmm. there are extra pages wherein other artists will show their take.
Yes, yes.
I don't like that. because it has come to the point that there's a certain look.
Only this.
There's a certain look to Lock and Key.
Sure.
And there is this particular appeal, the feeling of it that I appreciate.
What he does really well is the facial expressions.
Yes.
The reaction shots. Like you were saying, that the biting down on the lip and just fear. And you notice, like, it's very unglamorous.
It is.
Yeah.
There's nothing sexy.
Yeah.
There is nothing muted or out of focus. Right? Here, everything is there. And his designs for the keys. So I have a design company, so design is important.
Sure,
I look at
your
pretty things. They're beautiful.
For the keys, for the house.
For the house. They created the floor plan for that house just so that they could move their characters through. So there's a particular truth and consistency.
You know, there's a clear discipline to it, right? There's
it is
clear discipline. Like, you cannot create something like this without planning.
Yes. And so they planned it and thought it out, and that's why they earned our trust as readers.
Yeah.
And we gave them our money and our reading loyalty.
Hand over fist. Yeah. I made the mistake of just as soon as the issue came out, I bought it. And then like 2 days later, it went on sale in Comixology where you could get everything for 99 cents each.
Yes. Okay, so
but that's okay. Take my money, Joe and Gabriel. Take my money.
They deserve that. They deserve that. If I were still of the mode of buy every possible version of whatever, because I used to, I have the periodical, the soft first trade. If it comes in hardcover, I'll buy that hardcover and afford it just because I like it.
This is why you need a design company, Dean.
No, but now I can't. I have kids and all that. But for Lock and Key, I would happily buy, as a big fan, the merchandising. I want a t-shirt. I want a key. I want all
I would
that.
Like that as well. Did you get the last issue in periodical that supposedly has like the cutouts and everything?
I got it online.
Okay. Yeah.
So I don't have.
So I think we have to race each other to Comic Quest.
Yes, I'll have to do that now.
But this is, and thanks for talking with me, Dean, about Lock and Key. And this is just one of those comics that everybody needs to read. I'm so tired of everybody just talking to me about Watchmen and Mouse. And
we have to move on because Watchmen, Mouse, Persepolis, all of these things, very good, important, and they have their place in what has become the comic book canon.
Yes.
But we need to start looking also for new things and moving forward. So
acknowledging the great new work, you know?
Yes, because at a certain point, Persepolis was new.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mouse was new.
Yeah.
So this is our new thing. And it continues to bring hope to me that there will be other comic books and other interesting reads down the line.
And I think one of the reasons why there was holding off was because it wasn't done yet.
Yes.
And now it is, and it's so good. You know, just rereading the whole thing. So again, Dean and I, we will go on and keep saying, get this comic book.
Please do, because I am rarely reduced to a fangasmic kind of thing, and here I am. So please do. Lock and Key by Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You've been listening to the Lupenco Terati podcast with me, Carl Javier, and I'll see you guys next episode.